And on that note, I want to welcome everybody to the world according to Ben Stein. We are Ben Steinless for a few minutes, for a few moments. But we are joined tonight by the fabulous men from with the fabulous hair men. That would be Ken LaCourte and, of course, Rob Kendall. But Ken LaCourte from Media Action Network.
I'm going to wear a hat.
I can't deal with it, Ken. And since most of the people that listen to the show do it via podcast, if I could just explain to you how Ken's hair looks right now.
You know, almost looks like I woke up from a nap.
And I have no doubt that you did. Of course, we're joined by Bobby Kendall from 93.1, the present conservative talk radio. Bam. And I want to welcome everybody to our sparse crowd in the YouTube chat, since this is a surprise show. I want to remind everybody, you can download our podcast, please, whatever podcasts are available. We had our best week. Month yesterday was our best day we've ever had. I want to thank everybody for it. It means the world to us. Remember, benstein.substack.com for all your news. And of course, you could find us everywhere. But let's get the ball rolling. I'm going to put myself on mute because Ben's having a hard time getting through. So, Robert, why don't you tell us about the Fauci emails?
So, Ken, I'm sure you've been following this. These Fauci emails, Jude and I were talking about this before we went on the air. To me, they are fascinating because it basically shows everything that so many of us have said for the past year and a half have been proven completely correct. This is a guy who didn't know what he was doing. He changed his mind as often as he changed his underwear. And the guy is basically a shapeshifter who would do and say whatever it took to stay in the mainstream national media and keep getting himself on television and be the unquestioned grand czar of everything COVID.
Yes, and of course, before we get Ken, before we get Ben, of course, we are joined now by the man, the mystery, the legend, actor, writer, provocateur, saint, sinner, lover, grandfather, father, economist, but most of all, Dr. Benjamin Jeremy Stein.
Doctor.
I did say Dr. Ben.
Just finished an incredibly difficult procedure of separating Siamese triplets. Has never been done before. And I did it in a moving car. I did it while in a moving car.
And I'm amazed that you're still awake. Good job, sir. America salutes you for your triple Siamese split. But I want to get back to Rob, Ben, because Rob is explaining us today the intricacies of the Fauci emails, Rob.
Well, like I was just saying, I mean, to me, it's incredible that you see this guy who in these emails, it's very clear, was cognizant of the very things that he ridiculed any person who dared question him on, including that legendary altercation with Rand Paul. And the bottom line is it comes down to this. So it's for scientists not to know what's going on. It's okay for scientists to disagree. It's okay for scientists to debate, but we shut down societies based on these politicians, governors, mayors, et cetera, saying we're trusting science when it's proven now the science had no idea what was going on. It was totally making it up as they went along.
Well, my brain is weary after my Siamese triplet separation. I have seen this over and over and over again. The idea that if you call something science, that means it's true, verifiable, duplicatable. It's just nonsense. It is what we call science is there's very little outside the realm of mathematics that is really science. So with all due respect to Mr. Fauci or Dr. Fauci or whatever the hell he is, who I am sure has never done an operation like I did tonight. With all due respect to Mr. Dr. Fauci, the things he says are just things he made up. I mean, it's just like Bob was saying earlier. The things he said, Rob, was just what he made up to get the media to like him at that moment. I mean, they never knew what they were talking about. And in fact, Mr. Trump, who was nobody's idea of a scientist, just used common sense and got at it right away.
you know, I want to go to brilliant points, and thank you, Rob, for the intro for something I was having a hard time reading. But I want to go to the second biggest skeptic in America, to Michael Shermer from the Skeptic Society, the man with the gray hair today, Ken LaCourte. Ken,
yeah, what happened to your hair today, Ken?
What's that?
What happened to your hair today?
You know,
what happened to your hair today?
Ken, you look beautiful and you have hair. Ken, are you finally willing to concede that there's some sort of cabal going on? Some sort of, I don't want to even say, because I don't believe it's a conspiracy because it's out, that too much power was given to Fauci. There was an absolute media cabal of messaging going on, and nobody knew what the hell they were talking about on the court.
I think that's generally fair. I think that Fauci kind of had the advantage. Do you remember how he was thrust into consciousness? He was thrust into consciousness in the early weeks of this pandemic when the rumor came out that Trump wasn't letting him speak. And do you recall this? This was right when he was, right when I'd never heard of Fauci before, but the media was, you know, the media literally, if you said red is good, Trump likes red, the media would hate red. They'd throw away their red clothes, they'd throw away their red cars, they'd paint their red houses. And so he was thrust into consciousness in this whole thing as the guy that Trump wanted to stop him from giving a press conference. And I forget what the reality was there. It didn't really matter. And so they sainted him early on. I mean, before I'd ever heard of it, you know, he wasn't just Anthony Fauci. He was Anthony Fauci, the revered saint among endocrinologists. I mean, you know, he was loved by the press. And so, you know, he was the opposite of hydroxychloroquine, right? And so that kind of like put him into an exalted status in the early weeks of that. And then as Trump kind of had his press conferences, which sometimes were good, sometimes were goofy, and you couldn't go through them without hearing them 16 times explaining how he saved America because he closed down flights from China. He kind of went into a mantra on that day after day after day, that Fauci was elevated amongst the media. And I think precisely because of the reason that he was the anti-Trump to the media.
See, Ben, Ken raises a really interesting point, but I'll take it to a different angle. Trump had to do that because he had such little trust in this person that was sort of put upon him that he had to take because they didn't know what was going on. So Trump had to sort of angle him out however much he could, knowing that this guy was probably full of bullshit then.
Well, I think Trump had to angle him out for exactly the reasons that Bob and Ken just said, that because the media was saying he was Trump's enemy and that Trump hated him, Trump was going to say, ha ha, I'll fool you guys. I'll trust him. I will like him. And then now what are you going to say? So he sort of was trying to outmaneuver the media. But once again, we find that the president was put in a very bad spot because the media simply would not let him be put in a good spot. And I'd like to back up a little bit, drawing upon my superior age to any of you young chickens. And that is, I've seen this exact same thing over and over again when I was working with the people about Darwinian, the fake Darwinian evolution fraud, which is to say that there was simply never any reason to believe that Darwinism worked or could be verified or duplicated. And yet it was science. You couldn't go against it. If you went against it, you were a Nazi. If you went against it, you were either Nazi or a Jew. It couldn't be one or the other. So same thing happened with the virus and with Dr. Fauci. He was science, so he had before him, and also he was anti-Trump. So supposedly, although Trump kept saying he loved him, so he had to love him. So Trump was just put in a horrible position. This saint, as some of our members have said, this saint was put in his midst and he couldn't quarrel with him. Then finally, Trump, being a smart guy, he has said, wait a minute, he's not a saint. He's just an ordinary guy.
What do you say, Rob?
Well, the problem is, and we talked about this before we went on the air, for some reason, our society has a history of believing government when they tell them things. And we were, Judy, you and I were talking about how much this is reminiscent of the aftermath of 9/11. We must federalize the airlines. We must do Homeland Security. We must put TSA in charge of everything. And a whole bunch of, I mean, the Patriot Act, a whole bunch of those things we were told were just lies. They were lies to grow government, give government absolute power, and people bought it. And it seems like there is a huge swath of people who have done it again, no matter what Fauci says, no matter how obviously it's disproven. Look, he came out in the beginning and said, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. He came out in the beginning and said, don't wear a mask. That doesn't help. And you know what? He was right when he said, don't wear a mask because it doesn't help. And yet it just people keep making people who lie absolutists.
Ken, I want to go to you because Ben's eating a little bit, but Ken, I want to go to you.
No, I'm eating just to defy you.
Okay, but please don't. And Ken, I want to go to you because the right did the same thing. I mean, let's be real. After 9/11, we had Fox News. We had everybody basically saying, let's trust everything. And like what Rob said, he subsequently.
I'd like you to be more specific about that. I don't remember people saying, let's trust government on everything.
I remember not being as distrustful towards the Patriot Act as I should have been. But I mean, look, behind all of that was there were Muslims who wanted to blow us up. I mean, I was right. Rob, maybe the whole TSA was about increasing their powers on pat downs. On the other hand, we haven't seen too many aircraft blow out of the sky since September 11th. So there might be something on the other side. I don't know there. But the Patriot Act, we didn't dispute at all, I don't recall.
I'd like to back up a little tiny bit to my dear friends, Rob and Ken, and my dear friend, Judah. I never got and still don't get what was so wrong about the Patriot Act.
No, we're not referring to the Patriot Act, Ben. We're referring to actually going to war on faulty intelligence because everybody said... Give me one second. And that intelligence was considered science. Okay. It's the same exact science. Everybody said it. It must be true. Every intel organization said he has weapons of mass destruction.
With the greatest possible respect, I, you're a person who just did a triple separation, so let's give me some credit. I remember very well Saddam Hussein saying, if you will just let me stay on in power, you can send a detachment of the special forces, a detachment of the Marines, as many soldiers of the U.S. Army or the Marines as you want to supervise me and make sure I don't do anything crazy. But just please don't kick me out to be eventually murdered by my own people. And I remember vividly, if I may say so, writing, this sounds like a great idea. It spares us a war and accomplishes everything we want. And it seems to me there were other people saying the same thing.
Ben, aside from you and maybe a couple rational voices, most voices, almost everybody voted on the intelligence. Almost everybody voted on the intelligence except the few.
Let's back over just one second. Many years ago, before any of you were born, I worked in a very highly classified job studying specifications of Soviet bloc aircraft and missiles. I'm not kidding. This is not a joke like my triple separation was. And I would read things. And the things are just laughable on their face. And that was from our top biggest names in intelligence. And I remember thinking to myself, government intelligence. What an interesting concept.
Well, I'll use the same example and say government science. What an interesting thing. I mean, the parallels, Ben, in a sense, government science, government intelligence. Now the right doesn't trust government intelligence. They don't trust government science. The left trusts government science, and they trust government intelligence. It's absolutely happened the reverse to the parties.
It always does.
Yeah. Ken, I've never seen, and I agree with you, but I've never seen the parties shift in my lifetime this much towards the conservative or the Trump base, whatever you want to call it. having absolutely no trust in the government organizations.
I think that there is that as we have gotten more hardcore partisan over the past 10 years, the parties there's always this there's certain things that people care about and values that they stick with. There's a lot of other things that the parties are willing to throw on the other team's jersey very, very quickly. It's national debt is one. Outside of a few economists, you know, the only people that ever care about the national debt are the people out of party. The only people who really, really, really distrust the FBI and the CIA are usually the party out of power. And we see that flip very, very quickly.
Ken, I mean, this is where I want to disagree with you, because even, you know, it's, you would constantly hear, you would constantly hear rank and file. I mean, and when you look at all the blunders, the FBI has done, you know, leading up, and we would say, well, they're all good, rank and file. I mean, we've had we've had attacks in the United States that they knew about beforehand, that they were given tons of intel on, that they did nothing about. And listen, there are plenty, most of the people in the FBI are good, honest, solid citizens, but
fine
people, but there's a lot of bad apples. And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein, who's on location. We're all on location tonight, and we're all looking good. We're joined tonight from Media Action Network, Ken LaCourte, one of my favorite guests. My mother's favorite thing to read is LaCourte News. I encourage everybody to get it. And of course, Rob Kendall, the president of Conservative Talk Radio from 93.1 WIBC. Bam! I'm doing it differently tonight, Rob. And of course, America's Humble Servant, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. You can download our podcast wherever podcasts are downloadable. Of course, benstein.substack.com. And like I said, we had a record weeks. Please keep listening. Even if you listen to the show, it means a lot to us. Give us those 5-star reviews. And I'm Remzoing it right now. But I want to get back to this thing of Fauci that I don't think we could discuss enough, Ben. The impact that one man has had on the American public, from the elections to the economy, to everything else, that this one person that probably knew about COVID before anybody.
Let's back up here a second. Judah Meyer Friedman, you were the first person to say on this air, this very air that we're on tonight, this guy's a civil servant. He's not a big genius at some pharmaceutical company inventing drugs. He's not a big genius at some university graduate school of virology inventing drugs. He's a civil servant. How much do we trust civil servants? I was myself for some period of years a civil servant, and we all were very hardworking and dedicated. I don't think any of us was a genius. So there were people who questioned Fauci from the very beginning, and you, Judah, were one of them. Second thing is, what the heck were they supposed to do? They were confronted with a crisis, and they went running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and they absolutely took their leave of common sense. And yes, absolutely, they pushed the economy towards a recession. They pushed people into a panic. They didn't know any better. I mean, they're just people. And I don't mean to say Trump is evil. I love Trump. I still love Trump. I wish Trump were president. But let's not think there was a conspiracy here. They didn't know what to do. They really didn't. They still don't know what to do.
You see, this is where I'll disagree with you, and I'll go to Rob and then Ken. Rob, there were Trump didn't know what the impeachment trials were going on. He had just gotten done with the Mueller investigation. There was this constant onslaught of not a moment of breath that Trump could have. And then all of a sudden, this thing comes out. And as Ken brought up, he shut down the airlines. He shut down flights. He did the first best thing he could do in that situation, Rob. And the people always want to talk about people having blood on their hands, but it wasn't Republicans. It wasn't in the beginning. It wasn't Republicans or the Trump base that were saying this was nothing. Remember, we had Nancy Pelosi going to Chinatown going, this is no big deal. They were still excoriating him as this devastation was going on, Rob.
The problem isn't that they got it wrong. The problem is that so many politicians, and our governor, who's a pretend Republican, is included, who came out and said, we're trusting the science. No, you're not. Because we had a woman who worked under Fauci, who used to email the show all the time, who had worked under Fauci and said, he's not even doing these things that he's recommending at the organization that he oversees. They weren't trusting the science because the science didn't know. And these emails are super clear that the science didn't know. It's totally okay for science to be wrong. That's how we get to right. We have debates, we have discussions, we have the back and forth of ideas. The problem is they shut down society based on air quotes, the science, when it's very clear the science didn't know. And any scientist or doctor who stood up and waved their hand and say, hey, wait a second, I disagree with that, were totally outcast and demonized. It wasn't science. This was a witch hunt.
And what happened? How did he get the mantle of rectitude and invariable correct wrapped around him? But because he was said to be a demon anti-Trump person. And so the media, once again, by their obsessive hatred of Trump, which never made any sense, still doesn't make any sense, gave us this expert, this fake expert, to take us away, take away our basic rights and lead us down many wrong paths in dealing with this COVID. And he's still leading us down wrong paths. It's incredible. I mean, I'm in Virginia. I was just in Virginia a few moments ago. In Virginia, you can go one block and it's as if there were no pandemic. The next block, it's as if you're in East Berlin. I mean, it's unbelievable. We're still operating under incredible, crazy pretenses foisted upon us by Mr. Dr. whatever he is, Fauci. We're still operating with him pushing the buttons.
What do you say, Ken?
Look, I think all of that's true. I think it was a combination of shifting science because we didn't know certain things. I still think that they don't have a great idea on transmissibility of this thing. They're not really clear on what micron size is this transmitting from person to person, because different sizes mean different things. I think that masks to what efficacy they have versus being inside in an air conditioner versus there's still a whole lot that they don't know because they've never done a double blind study on the virality of this disease, and they probably never will. So part of it was like, it's like you had the underlying science, which, you know, everybody tried to look at, but it was shifting and still unknown. You throw in politics of look, the higher you go up in any organization, you know, at the top levels of media or entertainment or of the military, you're a politician at that level. You know, Dr. Fauci isn't rolling up his sleeves and separating too many twins this week. It's all about the politics, and that means constituencies and keeping things. The conjoined triplets. And then you throw in all of this other stuff, and then you literally throw in the goofiness of our times, where you know, I know what you think about disease based on who you voted for in the election. So some of that was natural, some of that was evil, some of that was people pretending as though they knew things and didn't. And yeah, we got a lot of change missteps. We've got probably a shutting down of the economy that we didn't need. But, you know, it's like, I remember myself when Nancy Pelosi went down into Chinatown and was like, come on and have lunch in Chinatown. I was like, I don't think this disease is that big of a deal. I think that they're pumping this up a lot more because they hate Trump, and I was actually supportive of Pelosi. Now, had I said that out loud and you pulled up the clip of me right before everybody started dying all over the place saying, come down to Chinatown to eat. So it's like, you know, I actually made predictions in my notebook on what I thought this was going to do. And I radically understated it because I felt that the experts were overstating it, and I never would have
predicted. I don't think you're alone, Ken. Many of us did do that. And Ben, I want to ask you, do you think we're ever going to get an accurate, to go to what Ken said, do you think we're ever going to have an accurate forensics on this whole thing of everything, of how it got caught, of how it got spread, of the outdoor, of being outdoors? Remember, Ben, this has been a year and close to 3 or 4 months. An economy, you know, if not for Trump, would have been decimated. Do you think we'll ever get a fair anything?
I think ever is a very long time, and I doubt it will be in my lifetime. But I think what I
well, that's
I
forever. Think,
well, God bless you, sir. But thank you. What I think is, we have once again, for the millionth time, let the media hatred of a man who really was and is a great man, despite what everyone says. And I know this will haunt me for the rest of my life, my saying this, namely Donald Trump. We have let media hatred of this man push us down many blind alleys. And that is, to me, a scary thing. It wasn't so much that we trusted the science or distrusted the science. It was that the blind hatred of this man pushed us into such dark corners and blind alleys. Why would we do this? There's never any reason to hate him at this level. There was never any reason to hate his policies at this level. A country run on the basis of hatred of a man is just not going to be a very successfully run country. And I think, to go back to your original question about the forensic and nature of the forensic event, I very much question if, as long as this country is run largely by hatred of Donald Trump, we'll ever get to the bottom of anything sensible.
And to the people listening, I want to apologize for the noise in the background. In Ben's apartment, they are in condo. They are sterilizing the equipment from the...
That is actually not true.
They're not sterilizing the equipment. Rob, I jumped in now.
No. The only problem here is these emails now prove deliberate deception from what Fauci knew to be true. There's a great example of him emailing a woman who I think she was HHS secretary under Obama. She was a very high level Obama official, and she's asking him about masks. And this was in
HR. Tell them to be fucking quiet.
Oh, that's the greatest line of the year, Ben Stein. Only on The World According to Ben Stein do you hear somebody say Cesar. Please tell them to effing be quiet. Oh, God. Brilliant. Ben, it's all good. Rob, go ahead.
I was just going to say that he's emailing this woman who was a high-level Obama official, and she's asking about masks. And he lays out the truth about masks, which is there may be some high-level, very high-level, specific types of circumstance good, but for the most part, they're not going to prevent a spread of a virus. And they're only designed to prevent sick people, knowingly sick people, from spreading it in close contact with people who are not ill. And yet he came out so many times over the past year and a half and said the exact opposite of that. So it's not that he was wrong or that science was debating it. He was deceptive.
He was deceptive, and the media was deceptive. The media was deceptive in saying, we know best, endlessly. Why is it that we think that the media knows best? Why is it that because words appear on a printed page, that because words travel down a screen on a telephone or a television or on a computer screen, that we believe these people are true? I was just in a grocery store in Virginia, and there was a headline in The Economist. It's a famous but incredibly stupid magazine coming out of London called Race in America. That's the title of the issue. And I thought to myself, now they don't know a goddamn thing about it. They never will know a thing about it. And we're going to believe it because it appears in the media. Likewise, the media never knew a damn thing about Corona. They still don't know a damn thing about Corona. And yet we're believing them because they're the media, because they said it. It's just, it's astonishing. Goebbels understood the media and its relation to public opinion and to public policy so much better than almost anyone else ever in the history of the world. And yet we ignore him. But he knew it. He knew what was going on. He knew how it worked.
On the court.
I know, we always think that we do better because they were all black and white back then. I mean, literally people watch black and white history film strips and think, well, that could never happen, or this isn't happening, or it's a completely different time. And you know, from A to Z, from the politics of the day to how media is distorted. And look, but let's open our eyes and say we're probably part of this. If we were all Democrats, we'd at this point we'd be making excuses for Fauci, and we'd be on the other side to some extent, assuming we acted like all of my
Democrats. You're absolutely right. But we know, those of us who have been on many different sides, that we don't know anything. The fact that I have a little teeny camera pointing at me, the fact that it's going to go out over the internet, which is potentially going to be watched by a great many people, that means I know anything. I mean, I do happen to know how to separate conjoined triplets, but I don't know that much about other things, and neither does anyone else. I mean, people don't know much.
It's interesting to see, though, now that Trump is gone, that the Wuhan lab, you know, is actually, maybe that's real. Maybe it wasn't just a random bat from 2,000 or 1,000 miles away from this area, but maybe this disease actually did come from the dangerous lab that was yards away from where we first discovered this, and they were actively in the process of investigating and possibly weaponizing coronavirus. Maybe it came from there.
And Ken, it's more than a maybe. I think you're being joking. Sorry, Ben.
We have the word of Mao Zedong himself, the great helmsman. The great helmsman who said, we can do anything we please, because if we lose 100 billion people, we just go on. It's just a hiccup for us. If America loses 100 million people, it's out of the ballgame. That's the end of America. And so we have an idea of who is going to be playing with germ warfare and who isn't. And yet we act as if we're playing by the Marquess of Queensbury rules with the English country gentleman.
And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein from Washington, D.C., on the road. On the road again, Ben. And you want to sing it?
No. I'm waiting to sing another one.
It's the only words to the song I know. On the road again.
On the road, and just can't wait to get
but
home.
If you just, I want to remind everybody to please download the podcast and also benstein.substack.com, but also you could live stream Rob Kendall's show on 93.1 WIBC. Bam, the president of Conservative Talk Radio every day from 9 to noon. And of course, Ken LaCourte from Media Action Network. Ken raised the point where I need to dispute half of it because I think you're right. We're all sycophants to a certain point. We all will defend the person in our party, but I think by the end of Bush's administration, most conservatives, most people that were honest, realized the mistakes that he made. I don't think he had many supporters in his own party. If you know, Obama could have run pretty much again. I mean, a nutless monkey could have run against McCain. And
won. Ah, I know that's from Tropic Thunder.
That's exactly right, and I'm glad you got that reference. The Republican Party by the end of Bush's term was so disenfranchised by the lies, by his lack of fighting back, by Ben, by his taking it on the chin, that I think we did.
I happen to love the guy, but go say whatever you want.
You know, you could like him personally, but look at the atrocities and look at the damage and wreckage that he not only did abroad, but that he did here. You know,
by so much an exaggeration of what he did.
I consider the Iraq War to be an atrocity. I consider the war that we've been.
I don't think atrocity is something awfully serious.
I consider that many U.S. people losing their lives and limbs and all that stuff over, I don't know what anymore. I don't know what, whatever word you want to call it, Rob.
Well, it was a serious mistake. I think an atrocity would be something that was done knowing and intending that it'd be horrible.
I think there's a lot of people, Ben, that believe that there were people in the Bush administration that might have entered through that war knowing. Not what would happen necessarily, but knowing that we went under the false pretense. But I could be wrong.
Look, nuance doesn't work in politics.
Sorry?
Nuance doesn't work in politics. It doesn't work in rallying a country to war either. You can't say, let's go to war because the geopolitical power of the Mideast and the amount of oil that this guy has now under his control is too high. That's just not a good slogan, all right? I mean, it's clear that the Bush administration decided to go to war and then filled up the, now let's figure out how to take America with us. And there were three or four levers that they could have pulled, and the one that they grabbed that seemed the easiest and clearest for them, and I believe that they believed at the time, was WMD. That was just there. They could have, I mean, look, they could have said, this guy, this, you know, we now live in an asymmetrical time and having an evil regime that's a billion-dollar regime that can now do these things and kill our people in different ways, and let's go ahead and see if we can revitalize the Mideast. Nobody puts on a uniform and wants to go shoot people for that. Has to be clear. Just like it has to be clear, you can't say, well, you know, if you're sick, you should wear a mask on the bus, but you shouldn't do it if that, you boil shit down simply and you say masks save lives. Or when you're decided that you don't want people to use masks because the PPE was short-sighted in this country because we had so much of it made in China, that then you'd say the opposite. Well, no, only healthcare providers need masks. And, you know, I don't view that as evilness as much as ham-handedness, oftentimes using the wrong answers and building up kind of baselines of that's how one gets support, not by nuance.
Well, with all, I think there's a great deal to that, and I'm sorry to say that Goebbels understood that too. It's scary to see how much he understood, but terrifying to see how much he understood, terrifying to see how much Lenin understood, terrifying to see how much Stalin understood. And you're right, nuance doesn't work in politics. I think there was some kind of psychological dimension to why Mr. Bush went to war. I think it had something to do with one-upping his father. I think it had something to do with getting revenge because Saddam tried to kill his father. But you're right, nuance doesn't work in politics. And in this case, Judah's completely right. There was no reason to go to war with Iraq. There was no point in it at all. It made no sense at all. But I don't think it was an atrocity.
Okay, let me change the word. It had catastrophic. It was a cat. That it had the events of us going into that war has led to catastrophic results in that region.
No, that region was a catastrophe. Before you were born, Judah.
No, I understand that, but we did have ISIS grow out of it. We had a lot of, there was a lot of, and let's not forget, Ken, also the troops that have died in Afghanistan and Iraq, that have lost limbs, that have lost lives, the family members. I mean, as we just had Memorial Day, let's not forget all of those soldiers that were injured or maimed. And I got to be honest with you, my biggest pet peeve about Bush is him painting these pictures of the wounded soldiers. Okay, it bothers me to note, it really bothers me, and it just really bothers me. Rob,
all wars are very bothersome. The first Gulf War was bothersome as well. I mean, mm-hmm. it was a little clearer because Saddam had just invaded a country next door to him, and then literally then controlled a third of the world's resources and oil resources. And we hate to act like that's a good reason to go to war, but it is. And I couldn't get past also at the end of that war, the first Gulf War, which was the good Gulf War, there were still thousands of very, very few, if you recall, very, very few American fatalities in that war. That was about as high tech, low death as a war that you can do against a serious country was the first Gulf War, because we did so much of it by plane and bombing things and by missiles. But there was still a lot of young men in this world who were dead because of that. And I could never get past the notion that at the end of this, I looked and I said, weird, because there's now at least 20,000 dead Iraqis, whatever that number is, it's tough to know. And George Bush is still president and Saddam Hussein is still president. And there's a bunch of dead young kids. That never really sat well with me. I mean, that's kind of most wars. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of guys my age dying on Normandy. So whether that war turns out to be something that we think was a moral important thing or was a bad thing, it's always awful, and it always rests on the blood of young men primarily.
Yeah, very, very true, but also unfortunately very true that it would have been very dangerous to let Saddam Hussein get Kuwait, and then also possibly get Saudi Arabia. Very, very, very dangerous. But I'm waiting to hear from Rob. We haven't heard from
him. I want to get to Rob, and then I want to bring up a point that you brought up, Ben, which I think is very interesting, but I want to get to. But Rob, go ahead.
But the issue we're talking about here with Iraq war and the issue we're talking about with Fauci and coronavirus are the same. They don't know. They say things as definitives, and then they change people's lives forever on definitive statements. The government should have come out from the beginning with coronavirus and said, we don't know. Like, here's what we think. Here's what we guess. You make the best choice based on that. My issue with it is not that they didn't know, but that they destroyed lives. I mean, in Indiana, our governor put over 1 million people out of work. He shut down tens of thousands of businesses. He tried to put people in jail for not wearing a mask. And he kept hiding behind this bull crap. Oh, we listen to the science. That this is the fraud in all this. It's just like with the Bush administration and the Iraq war. It's not the, in, take all the administrations, take all the issues. Government is a fraud. Government doesn't know. And we keep treating government like it's some sort of deity that always has our best interest at heart when it has its own best interest at heart.
Don't make us defend government here.
People in the government have their own best interest at heart. That's, I mean, government itself is a largely an abstract concept, but there are individuals in government who can advance their careers by starting a war. And that's the very tragic part, that there are people whose promotion and exalted status in life, indeed, as Ken said, are swimming in the blood of young men.
Ken?
I think we've talked this out.
But Ben, I want to bring up an interesting, thanks, Ken. You're just
the government sucks.
No, but I want to bring up something interesting that Ben said, is that Ben brought up the point where why he actually went to war, and it was, you know, for whatever, his father. Just the fact that Ben Stein is questioning the motives of that is a sort of a scary thing to me, and it's a very telling thing to me that one of the brightest minds of a generation is basically saying he doesn't, and it's scary is that he doesn't trust, and that and
to say that, unless you're referring to yourself, but I'm not one of the brightest minds of any generation, but I'll back up and just tell you one little story. Years and years ago, I was a practicing trial lawyer. First case I was assigned by a high official at a very important government agency was at the XXXX base. And I said to the man in charge, who was assigned to this, I said, sir, after a couple of days, I've studied the documents. I don't think there's a case here. We shouldn't have brought this case. We should apologize to the defendants and drop the case. And he said, no, fuck them. And I said, but sir, they haven't done anything wrong. And he said, fuck them, they're Coca-Cola Foods. I said, sir, it's going to cost them a great deal of money to defend this case, and we shouldn't be bringing it in the first place. And he said, they've got all the money in the world. There are words to that effect, not that exact phrase. They're Coca-Cola Foods. And I remember thinking to myself, wow. And I was too stupid and cowardly to just say, all right, I quit. I should have done that. But I don't think people generally do that, especially when they're 26 years old lawyers who are being handed as their first case a quite large case. And similarly, if you're in foreign policy or defense, I think the same principles and their enforcement principles apply.
It's the principle of being a bureaucrat and a civil servant. Sometimes, Ben, nobody wants to lose their job. People just go with the flow, like the twig on the shoulder of a mighty stream. But Ken LaCourte, most importantly, wants to change the topic. So I will. I want to go to what Ben brought up about the magazine that he was reading. And I sent Kent the piece today. I'm not sure if he read it. Ken often ignores my text. But Ben, it goes to what you said about how this British paper is telling about race in America, when we know the UK has massive race problems. But there is an actress who, and this is, I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
This is beyond belief. You know?
There is an actress, and people aren't familiar with this, the girl who played the secretary on The Office, Ellie Kemper, who's a very talented actress. And I don't know one thing about her or the other, but she was she won the award in 1999 for winning the Queen of Love and Beauty at St. Louis Veiled Prophet Ball in 1999. And now she is, because they didn't allow blacks in 20 years prior, in 1979, they integrated it. She is now being called a racist and they want to cancel, and I say, which means kill her, because kill her career. And when we go to the question again, Ben, it's nothing, is there nothing they won't go, we know there's nothing they won't go after, but is there no time? Is there nothing that will, you know, the amount of time passed? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if somebody can advance his career or her career by going after the person, no matter how much time has passed. It all depends on whose career is going to be advanced or moved forward by doing such and such a thing. I mean, I give you the example, if I may, respectfully, of the people in the New York State and New York City DA's offices going after the Trump family. And they haven't announced what the crime is. They're going after them, but they haven't announced what the crime is, or even what the alleged or possible or hypothetical
they're looking crime. For.
They're looking for it. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's why they do this. Yeah.
They're looking for, well, that, again, this goes to my point. It's not that the government, like some giant supersized amoeba, is going after something to eat. It's going to advance somebody's career. And that's, as my wife would say, my saintly goddess wife, that's a heart-rendering situation, that people will eat up other people's lives to advance their career. That's a heart-rendering situation.
And Ken, I want to defend, this is, you know, where you at Fox, there were no bigger defenders of people through the years than the people in the nighttime, especially at Fox News. I mean, Hannity and O'Reilly, whatever people want to think about them, these guys came to the defense of anybody on the left that was tried to, that they tried to cancel, no matter who it was, whether it was Bill Maher, whoever. Sorry,
there was a consistency to supporting free speech.
Yes, there was an extreme consistent. Yeah. So go. I just go ahead. Ken.
Look, the interesting thing on this, it wasn't like this gal did anything wrong even 20 years ago. It's that 20 years ago she got an award from a group who 20 years before that wouldn't let blacks in. It's like saying, well, you know, 14-year-old kid, you're a member of the Mormon Church. You know, they wouldn't let blacks be deacons all that long. You know, until the X year. And look, the good news on this is there used to be a time if like some reporters and people online called you a racist, that some people actually might think you're a racist. And the good news is now nobody thinks that this gal's a racist just because like some people
amazing
make the charge. I'm just saying that charge is weaker than Wolf at this point.
Amazing thing is they make these charges and they are obviously nonsense. And yet people's careers get ruined because of them.
Yeah, you know, well, it's still, you know, they then, you know, a lot of this is people need to learn from Trump, because then when you start apologizing and falling on and saying, I'm sorry that I won a beauty contest in 1980 from some group that in 1965 wouldn't let, certainly we are seeing kind of a little bit of who's the most successful at being able to defend that or not. And the answer is to always push back at this point. It's not to be nuanced at all. It's just to move forward. And not everybody has gotten that message yet.
So. And to bring up,
with all due respect, my dear friend, you can push back if you are a Cuomo and if you're a part of the beautiful people and if your brother is a power at CNN, if you're an ordinary citizen, you can't push back. Your career is going to be ruined, and it's outrageous, but it is going to happen, and it's astonishing. I mean, we now live in a police state. Don't get me wrong. I've said many, many times, day by day, day to day life in America is great, and it is. But we now live in a police state under which, once you're accused of being a racist, your career and your whole life are very badly impacted.
And Rob, we know a lot of people do not read the full story, right? So now Google, when you type in Ellie Kemper, will be inundated with her receiving the award for being for the Belle of the Racist Ball. And the Daily Beast wrote about, I mean, and this is the reality. And I mean, I don't want to go to Rob, but this will tag her. This will be, for, you know, the first couple pages when you type in Ellie Kemper, this will come up right now. Forever.
Yeah, we just saw this too on The Bachelorette, where this chick who they were competing to end up with an African-American gentleman. And she in college had been in some party or whatever. There was not like it was, you know, a Confederate flag found anywhere or anything, but she was in one of these balls and they took her out, and they took out the guy who was the host of the show because he tried to defend her and say she wasn't a racist.
And he barely did that, didn't he? He was just like, I'm not convinced that actually means she's
Sharon Osbourne did. He did the Sharon Osbourne where he defended somebody. Unlike Sharon Osbourne, though, Sharon Osbourne didn't take back her apology. But Ben, I want to go to this. This is such a larger picture of fear. We're not only scared of Americans, we're scared of China. So you have this actor, forget about we're scared of China's powers. We're scared of China's finances. So you have this actor that has to take back John Cena, who I don't even know who anybody will go look at his movies anymore, who has to take down a tweet that he said. Now you have movie companies telling Gal Gadot, that she, Wonder Woman, that she has to take back the tweet supporting Israel. So, I mean, we're in bizarre times because I can't imagine, listen, we're four people here. We all agree with each other. We disagree with each other.
I agree with him. I'm kidding.
But Ben, it's like, and I really want to believe that most of us don't care what Gal Gadot tweeted and wouldn't have cared about what John Cena tweeted or didn't care.
He's
a former wrestler who's now in the movies, who tweeted something about Hong Kong being its own country.
He actually said that Taiwan's a country.
Taiwan. Yeah.
And of course, and so then it was like, you know, they pulled him into the back room, explained, you know, we're going to lose all our China deals because of this. So he came out and gave an apology to China in Mandarin. And when you read the subtitles, it was the saddest thing you've ever seen, because he was apologizing, he was groveling the way that the people in China do, you know, when they pull them into their little kangaroo court, and it's like, you know, your family's going to disappear if you don't apologize for saying water was wet or whatever it was. So he was like, you know, to the great Chinese people, I humbly apologize. I never thought that Taiwan was a country. It was old. I was tired. It was the saddest freaking thing I'd seen.
I love how you just had a Chinese and Irish accent at one time. Brilliant.
Well, my Mandarin is pure with no accent, but my English version of that.
You see, Ben, I want to go to you for a second. Don't you think it's more? It seems like our country were prisoners of war, like it's like almost like, you know, like the prisoners of war. They would give them these statements to say in order so they would stay alive. Like that's what John Cena had to do the other day. He had to read something obviously not written by himself. And like a prisoner of war, basically.
I am.
Sorry, Mrs. Lovett, but Ben, yeah, please.
I couldn't agree more. We are in a situation where people have to, where the whole society has now been brainwashed about all kinds of political correctness. And as you so aptly said, Judah, we're now not only being ordered around by our own dopey kids, brainwashed in third or fourth grade, and become totally hopeless idiots by third grade. We're being ordered around by the fucking Chinese communists. What kind of craziness is that? What kind of craziness is that?
No, it's absolutely, Rob, it's frightening. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, people have become completely beholden to fame, fortune, and the dollar above their own, not just national pride, but self-pride. I mean, the John Cena thing is pathetic. Like, if you go to Wikipedia, the number one thing it says is they're a country. Taiwan is country, right? It says it right up there at the top. Nobody's going to accuse Wikipedia for being far right. It is a country.
Now you just lost your Chinese affiliates.
But I mean, this is ridiculous. It's like, instead of him saying, no, it is. Like, this is ridiculous. It's not even debatable. These people grovel and they embolden really bad, dangerous people.
The irony is that the ones who are coming out the best on this are the real racists. It's like, wow, now those blacks have their own graduations in college. They now are starting to have their own segregated rooms again. everything is all about race. Oh, we don't like interracial marriage and adoption anymore. I mean, if you're a hardcore, true believing KKK MFer, America's come more towards you in the last 4 years than any time in my lifetime.
You know, with all due respect, Ken, beyond even my separating the conjoined triplets, I am happier about, I was very happy about that, but I'm happy to say that you agree with me, I'm sure at this point, that George Wallace understood America and understood the zaniness underneath everything better than any other post-war politician.
Interesting. No, I don't know enough about George Wallace to even have an opinion on it, is why. I trust you, but I don't know enough about George Wallace or history to me.
There's a good documentary if you're interested, Ken. Ben, what's the documentary called?
Called Set the Woods on Fire, and it was a PBS documentary, and here's something really interesting. It is out of circulation. It has been, the Ministry of Truth has it's gone. You can't get it. I had to go to an incredible amount of trouble to get it. And it is, it's incredibly interesting. And even though it shows Governor Wallace becoming very, very fond of African-American people by the end of his life, it is still banned. It doesn't exist. It's as if it never existed. I have a copy hidden at my house. I won't even tell you which one of my house it's at, because I don't want you breaking in. And you're not, it doesn't exist. It's never existed, exactly like the Ministry of Truth in 1984. And George Orwell saw all of it coming.
Rob with the luscious locks.
Well, is Rimzo still part of the show? Are we allowed to talk about Rimzo anymore?
Yes, of course, of course.
Rimzo told that story about Wallace. I think it's in the book that he wrote about, you know, Wallace giving this, the little kid going into Wallace's room after a speech, and he brings him in, and he's basically putting on that it's sort of, you know, this is politics, it's all an act. And it's amazing now, you kind of wonder how much of this is an act and how much these politicians and these corporate CEOs believe this bull crap. I mean, I guess that's what I'd like to know, is how much of it do they really believe, and how much of it is an actual act just to try to appease people?
Of course it's an actual act. Do you think these people at their country clubs really think blacks are the equal of whites? Are you kidding? Are you crazy? Of course they don't. It's all an act.
I don't know what to respond. I don't know what to follow that up with. But I want to say something. It's sort of interesting, Ben, how you always bring up how, you know, the entertainment industry is such a small part of the economy. It's just a tiny part.
Very
tiny part. Yet they might be this tiny part, but the decisions that they make have such devastating consequences on our society, catastrophic consequences on our society, that it's, I was looking for the other word, but I forgot what word Ben didn't like before. Sorry?
The
atrocities that the entertainment industry is causing on our society is huge. As tiny as they are financially, Ben, everything.
They are controlling the levers of thought. They are the thought police. In pre-war Japan, up till the end, till 1945, there was something in Japan called the Kempeitai. Literally, the translation is the thought police. And they were in charge of making sure you did not even think of anything contrary to the samurai system or contrary to the emperor. And that is what we're in now in terms of Black people. We cannot say anything even remotely anti-Black. Same thing about women, same thing about gays, same thing about communists. We simply cannot say anything. I have a very smart, very, 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 very tall friend, and she says to me, when did the communists become so influential in America? What happened? I mean, for a long time, calling someone a communist was like damning him and sending him to purgatory forever. Then suddenly it became the coolest, hippest thing to be a communist. What happened?
Well, you know, Trump was a capitalist.
That's very good. That's,
you know, you as we're running out of time, and I'm looking at Rob's luscious locks, I want to, you know, There used to be a time where people in sports, where people, you know, somebody brought this up in the chat, really were patriots, you know. And I was looking, I was watching a baseball game the other day, and they were showing images of Willie Mays and Ted Williams and these ball players and people like Hank Greenberg, who is a Jewish spy, you know. And they were showing Ben the patriotism of people in the entertainment industry.
You mentioned him. Yeah, he was the greatest.
The greatest ball player of all time, and probably considered one of the greatest pilots of all time. You know, fighter pilots of all time.
Great American.
And it really is saddening. It's so sad to take these people and then look at the people we have now. And the juxtaposition is just crazy. And Ben, are you free tomorrow night or you're not? You didn't let me know.
Am I free?
Yeah. So are you doing a triple bypass on Siamese?
I will see. I'm not sure. It depends who comes to me. These hands.
Okay. So on that note, everybody listening, we will be here tomorrow night too. We are just pumping them out. And we're hoping you're enjoying them with Ben Stein's medical skills. Rob Kendall, tell people where they could find you every day and how to find you.
9 until noon Eastern, WIBC, The Mock and Rob Show, WIBC.com.
Bam. The president of Conservative Talk Radio. Ken LaCorte in one sentence, and tell people how they could find you and what you're about.
We let you help punch back at the liberal media, and just as importantly, perhaps more importantly, we help defend the people who were defamed by the media. This week we were helping some poor teacher who had the temerity to act like females give birth to human beings. And we are at mediaactionnetwork.com.
Fran Friedman's favorite site. And of course, you can find Ben on spectator.org, Parler at Ben Stein. And I know Parler has not been what it was. And of course, you could often find Ben at Newsmax. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody who's been downloading the show, benstein.substack.com. And don't forget, even if you listen here, still download the episodes wherever you could download. Thank you very much. I'm amazed with all the people that have tuned in tonight, considering we didn't give any heads up. But we will be back tomorrow night. Ben, take us out.
There's a story in our town of the prettiest girl around. Golden hair and eyes of blue, how those eyes could flash at you. Boys hung round her by the score, but she loved the boy next door who worked at the candy store. Dream on, teenage queen, prettiest girl we've ever seen.
Have a great night, all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good night.
Good night.